5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live. It is presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri, 98,000 strong, packed into Wembley Stadium to watch Anthony Joshua get demolished by Daniel Dubois. We're going to talk a lot about that fight. That was the fight of the weekend. What a spectacle. What a scene. Jaime Munguia gets a knockout win on Friday night over in Arizona, where Chris was there on the call for ESPN International. Chris is with us, as he is with us every single week, twice a week. We're going to get back onto that schedule, too. Chris, how are you? What a weekend. What a weekend. We're back on a nice Monday episode of Inside Boxing Live.
I'm good. You see my bag over there in the corner. That's still not even unpacked because, you know, it's been that kind of schedule. But we got some fun fights to talk about.
How was Arizona? Before we get into what went down at Wembley, you were on the call, like I said, for Jaime Munguia, Richard Torres, Emiliano Vargas, some other top-ranked studs that they have. How was the trip, first of all? What goes on in Arizona? Because I feel like our listeners enjoy our travels.
Number one, Arizona is super hot. Glendale is like one of those like prop New. It's very pop New York City. Like it's just like, hey, let's put a Carl's Jr. and then a Mike Subs, and you know, like it's just like a bunch of places like that. Like, good, you know, it was a bunch of it's like an outdoor mall kind of thing. But I did go hiking, and that was actually very, very nice. Got to see a grand landscape of the entire Glendale area. But other than that, you know, hotel was nice, and the fights were good. So a lot of good fights. Actually, myself.
No one from Top Rank, ESPN wanted to go.
I didn't ask anybody. I'd rather spend my time by myself.
Couldn't get Carl Barretti to come. Couldn't get Bernardo. Couldn't.
Those
get
guys
Bradley.
Are so a lot of the guys are busy golfing. Bradley, I can't imagine Bradley going out there in the elements.
The Desert Storm? Come on, what do you mean?
That was a lifelong left behind.
Yeah, 10 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, maybe next time I'll ask him.
He might have been at Carl's Jr. No offense to Tim.
I'm gonna ask him on video so he can laugh in my face and I can share that with everyone. Hey Tim, you want to go hiking tomorrow? And then he'd be like, "Man, get the out of here!" And I'm like,
he's
"Okay,
he's done. He's not training anymore. He's a pundit."
I did like a 6 mile hike. It was like 2.5 miles up, and then around, and then by the time I got to an area where an Uber service actually worked, it was another mile or so.
Ubered back.
Yeah, I had to move Uber there and back.
Oh, to the actual trail.
Yeah. So I had to go to the mountains. And it's like that was like a good 45 minutes. So I left pretty early on Saturday morning before the fight.
That's what you do on fight
day. Yeah, that's what I do on fight day.
What happens if you got lost? Who would have stepped in?
I mean, it's funny because hiking can be dangerous, but there was trails, there was trail markers. I saw a bunch of mountain bikers along the way. So I was like, all right, hiking alone is not my favorite thing to do because it is dangerous, but I saw people on the trail. So I'm like, all right, we're good.
He's good. Chris Algieri hiking through Arizona on fight day. We will talk about Jaime Munguia's win and what it means for 168 later on. But this episode is mostly about Anthony Joshua. You watched the fight on PPV.com for $20. I think you got some bang for your buck. Emphasis on bang. Because boy, bang, those bang, big bang, boys, bang. And it was on PPV.com. That's our proud presenting sponsor. Stream all your pay-per-view events, whether it's boxing, AEW, wrestling, and some other live events on PPV.com. No subscriptions. That was the beauty of Saturday's fights. $20. And I saw some people saying, oh, yeah, $20, but then I also have to have a DAZN subscription. No, $20 on PPV.com. Put your email in. Boom, you're in live interactive chat. I was in there for a little bit. I had some other stuff going on, so I missed a little bit of the undercard, but I got home in time for the main event, which was on PPV.com, streaming crystal clear.
So we're talking about PPV.com. Let me just – I don't know if this is even – like legal to talk about, but for the record, PPV.com streams on flights. So
really?
Oh yeah. So you're I was flying home long trek. Left at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning. Didn't land till 4:17 East Coast time.
Disgusting.
Terrible, terrible day of travel. But that second leg of the fight, I was able... Actually, no. Toward the end of the first leg, I was able to watch those fights live on PPV.com on my computer.
That's insane.
Another amazing way, another amazing reason to be joined up with PPV.com.
I don't think
it's
illegal, so.
I don't know if it's legal or illegal.
It's illegal.
Is it? They say not to stream on the flights.
You're going to bring down the plane?
Apparently, you have to put your phone in airplane mode,
which has never
brought down a flight ever, by the way. But they do. They still tell you to do that.
I sat next to a pilot once, and he was a big boxing fan. And I'm just a general, like, I like flying and little facts about flying. So he asked me a bunch of boxing questions, and I asked him a bunch of flying questions. And he said, taking off is way harder than landing. Turbulence, don't worry about it. Don't worry about turbulence, Dan.
I knew about turbulence. He
gave me some insight onto, like, where all the pilots sleep in these, like, little houses, like, all over these little hubs and, like, bunk beds and stuff. Didn't sound too glorious or too... too nice in terms of that. But he also did tell me that I forgot what we were saying here. What was the point of this?
Airplane mode on phones.
Right. He said, yeah, no plane is ever going down because you leave your phone on or your device. It's the same thing growing up. Remember our parents told us if you put the light on in the car while you were driving, you were going to go to prison.
Yeah.
That's not true either.
Yeah, I got that. I got that
so
a
Chris,
lot.
You're allowed to stream on the flight. And to know that PPV.com has a clear stream.
Clear, strong.
Feet in the air. That's just even more reason to order fights at PPV.com.
So, guys, I was literally on the flight home from – I was going from Phoenix to Atlanta, and I was watching the first couple fights on there. And then from Atlanta to South Florida to Fort Lauderdale, still watching flights. No problem. Great stream. I got a little thing buffer. Like two times. Literally, the buffer went on. I was like, no. And then it opened up. I was like, good. All right.
Double buffer. Michael Buffer. He was there.
He was there.
Yeah, let's get into it. Big fight of the weekend. 98,000 strong at Wembley Stadium. A sea of humanity. What a freaking scene that was. Anthony Joshua versus Daniel Dubois. Daniel Dubois takes out Anthony Joshua early and often from the opening bell. He was on his ass. He was on AJ. I don't know what the heck AJ was doing in there. I think he might have been zapped. I think he might have been warped. I think he might have been hypnotized because this guy threw technique out the window. One of the most technical heavyweights there is right now in the game. I don't know what the heck happened, Chris. Can you make sense of it? Can you make sense of what happened inside of that ring? Kudos to Daniel Dubois, who is now the legitimate IBF heavyweight champion.
Dan, I don't know why I didn't see this coming. And I think I'm blinded by the fact that I'm such a huge Anthony Joshua fan that I was like, Joshua's going to win. Joshua's got all these things, like whatever. But if you really looked at it, that was inevitable. That was going to happen. People like us who are thinking Anthony Joshua was going to get the win were thinking, you know, experience, Wembley, been there. You know, Dubois has struggled psychologically in fights, although his last couple fights, he's really overcome that. But was that really going to matter? And was that really going to be the difference when he came to that moment in front of 98,000, in front of Anthony Joshua, the best guy he's ever fought? And he showed up. You could see it. I saw it right away.
Dude, so, I saw it on the ring walk. He was running into that ring.
Anthony's ring walk looked awesome. Yeah, I mean, that was tremendous. That was like, I'm like, wow, all right, here we go. But Dan, did you see it as soon as he stepped in the ring? I'm like, oh, it's gone. He left it on the walk. He was gone. He looked nervous. He looked tight. He looked stiff. And Dubois looked like, start this goddamn fight. Ring that bell so I can get over there and maul this man. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, the jabs that Dubois was landing, jumping from across the ring, like, oh, bong. He knew as soon as he hit him, everything that he threw, everything that he landed, shook Joshua from his head to his heels. The power differential was so great. The confidence was so different between those two guys. I mean, I wanted to text you. You know, we were texting a little bit during for the people at home, because Dan and I always text during fights. But yeah, it was hard because this is one of those fights that was like really. I wanted to text you 30 seconds in. I was like, Joshua's dust.
We could have like, put a live bet. Because last time, you remember last time? You were like, we were looking at that Dubois KO for plus 350. So any Dubois backers out there, congratulations, because you cashed in.
Dude.
The live betting, I mean, right after the, like, live betting's pretty cool because, like, the odds change. And after that first, obviously.
Well, you see it. You watch it. Exactly. You're like, oh, this fight's different. This is a whole different fight.
Joshua went down at the end of the first round. But leading up to that, Chris, the opening bell, Dubois came out front foot.
Yep.
Joshua was on.
Confident. Confident.
Right, and Joshua was on the back foot, and he was on the defense right away. But defense with his hands down, defense, you know.
Chin up in the air. Like, the chin in the air was crazy to me.
But also
throwing zero power. Like, Joshua did not look strong. He was so hesitant even in the first round throwing punches. I was like, oh, no, this is not going to work. You got to – Dubois is a tough guy. You got to hit him for real. Ergovic did, and, you know, it turned out later Anthony – could hurt him, you know, when he actually threw for real. But he didn't learn. He didn't figure out to throw hard until like round four. But he was already diminished at that point. His chin was already checked. That fight could have been very different if Anthony came out a different way. But it's listen, the history is written.
Yeah. Before we get into like the actual fight, I want to talk about the scene. 98,000, the biggest crowd in the history of Wembley Stadium for a sporting event. Definitely for a boxing event. We saw AJ take on Klitschko there, which began his run, which is kind of full circle.
Tremendous. Because one of the best heavyweight fights of modern era, by the
Klitschko,
way.
Klitschko, Joshua?
Yes.
Yes, I agree. We'll see if this is the end for Joshua. Get some thoughts on that later on. I don't think so, but who knows? But 98,000 at Wembley, it was just so loud when they're doing those talking head segments. They had to do a really long fill. It's just you could hear the sea of humans, and the scenes were epic. You know, it puts hair on the back of your neck stand up. You get the goosebumps. The ring walks were out of this world. They were just electric. They were just like out of a movie. Like Joshua's was so cool. Dubois was great too because he was running in there. And just the whole scene. Like, there's nothing better in sports, in my opinion, than a big time heavyweight fight. It didn't get any more big time in terms of crowd than this fight. Have there been bigger heavyweight fights in the last 10 years? Of course. But something about close to 100,000, something about Joshua, something about Dubois, who's a very worthy challenger and ended up, you know, he was a champion technically. And he came in first, which is kind of messed up. That's kind of a storyline of the week, is Dubois being overlooked. Dubois just being like the opponent, you know, Dubois not being AJ. Everyone talking about AJ this, AJ that. But, you know, Daniel Dubois, Chris, four fights in the last 13 months. He fought Usyk. He fought Jarrell Miller, he fought Hrgović, and he fought Anthony Joshua. If there was ever a case for activity mattering in boxing, then it's Daniel Dubois. Active, dangerous. He goes in there and he takes out Anthony Joshua. I just wanted to set the scene first before I get into the fight. But man, what a scene, and then what a performance by Dubois.
Dubois, when we spoke about this on our air many times, he has turned a corner. And I'm going back to the conversation he had in the ring after Usyk, when Usyk grabs him and goes, right. Hey, man, you're a good fighter. You got it.
Yeah.
Keep working. Go back to the gym. You can do this. And then he shows up for Jarrell Miller. And I've said it over and over again. I'm sorry for everyone who listens to me a lot. Ad nauseum. Jarrell Miller abuses him all fight week. And Jarrell's a big, bad dude at heavyweight. He's a tough out for anybody. And I remember that we were watching that fight live, you and I, and we were commentating in the PPV chat. And I was like, man, this guy could really punch with both hands. And he ends up stopping Jarrell. Big win. Won every round. Won every second of that fight. Then we get the Ergovic fight. I'm thinking, no way he beats Ergovic. Ergovic, I thought, was big time. I thought Ergovic was the next coming of the heavyweight division. And Ergovic looked all of that in the first couple of rounds, landing tremendous right hands over and over again. Mm-hmm. Dubois shows a chin of granite and then ends up battling back, cutting Ergovic, hurting him, beating him up, breaking him to the point of quitting, essentially. And then it's just like, wow, who is this guy? And then he shows up and does it again. I mean, he's a problem for everyone in this division. He's so strong. He looked so strong.
He looked huge.
And he's so big. He's so durable. This is a different, this guy, I mean, this guy's, this is a different, this is a different Daniel Dubois than we've ever seen. These last three fights, like you said, very, very tight succession. That's the guy, man.
Yeah, even to go back even further, the 2020 when he lost to Joe Joyce.
Joe Joyce.
The broken orbital bone.
Dude, that one, I always go with that one. I'm like, dude, I've had that eye injury. That's horrible.
Yeah, but that
horrible.
Was his first loss. And yeah. You know,
he took a lot of heat for that.
He was signed, Daniel Dubois, by Frank Warren right in the middle of all the AJ hype, before AJ had even lost to Ruiz. And he was supposed to be the B to Anthony Joshua's A. You know what I mean? He was supposed to be Frank Warren's Anthony Joshua. Not in terms of like magnetic smile or personality or star power, in terms of being able to beat Anthony Joshua one day.
Yep.
And he loses in 2020 to Joe Joyce. He takes the knee, he breaks the eye, the orbital bone. He is pretty much left for dead. You know how it is in boxing. One loss, especially if you take a knee, the visual of it, even if fans don't understand how devastating a broken orbital bone is, but knowing to live to
which fight, they never will. No one ever will. Fighters who haven't even experienced that will never understand what that's like.
That's what I mean. Like, he took a lot of flack, and he 4 years later.
I went to bat for him on that. I don't know if I was still on Twitter at that time, but I got asked by people. I got interviewed, and I said, I was like, listen, you can't judge a man by that.
Yeah. Kudos to Dubois. I mean, he's got everyone's respect now. I saw Jarrell Miller on the ring apron smiling with Daniel Dubois. I'm sure Filip Pergovic was watching somewhere, you know, maybe with a beer in hand, a little bitter, but also kind of like, you know what, kid, you did it. Like the bully, you know, give him a little head nod. The whole boxing world is respecting Dubois. Because not a lot of people were picking Daniel Dubois to beat AJ. I'm sure there's some out there because of the odds and everything. But and if now you go in hindsight a little bit and you think about Joshua – you know, you just think about it. The win over Valine, solid, but not really a top 10 heavyweight.
He had no resistance in those fights.
Right, and the Ngannou fight was legitimately nothing, but it was a powerful knockout. The some of the other comeback fights that he had along this
with Franklin. Franklin was that was not a very good fight, honestly.
Right, but you're right, Chris. What you said something at the beginning of this show is like we're kind of blinded by Joshua. We're blinded still by this guy who that's what Anthony Joshua is. That's why he's so compelling because he's such a star. You know, he has such we care so
such
much
a stud too. He's a stud and a star. Like he's such a stud.
He's so damn good. Such a big star. And had the string of knockouts over Ngannou and some other impressive performances and picking himself up off the mat. But if you really can use hindsight and look back, you say, come on, take a look at who Dubois has been fighting over the last year and a half.
He's also very young.
Take a look at what Joshua was doing over the last year or whatever. He made the bag against Ngannou. You know, looked good in some of these fights, but once again, activity matters. Competition matters. Going in there with Usyk, going in there with Hrgović, and it showed. Another thing too, Dubois being the specimen, he made Joshua look small in there. Anthony Joshua is one of the biggest humans I've ever seen interviewed. Anthony Joshua and Dubois made him look tiny in there, and ended up bouncing him around the ring, outlanded him like 3-1, stopping him. That last sequence, just talk about that. I mean, this was like Hagler Hearns, bro. This thing lived up to everything. With all the fans there, a shootout. Down in the first round, Joshua. On a punch that probably would have knocked out just about anyone. I don't know how he got up from that, but his legs were gone from that first knockdown in the first round. Perfectly placed right hand on the chin of Joshua.
Hit nothing but chin.
Nothing but. First
overhand,
of all, Chris.
Overhand right on the ropes.
Chris,
bang,
how
hit
the heck,
chin.
How did he not see that? How did Joshua not see that punch? I just don't understand his game.
You mentioned the size. I don't think Anthony is used to fighting guys that are as big and as long as him. So he thought he was safe. He pulls back normally with guys who are shorter than him, normally with guys that don't have a reach like him. He was safe there. That punch landed right on the end of the shot, which, guys, for people at home, that's the biggest power you have is at the end of the punch, especially when you have a long leverage, long arms, the way that these heavyweights do, these modern heavyweights. So I think he thought he was safe. And I'm going to go to something that I said on when I did a post-fight live with ProBox TV. Todd Grisham said it on air, and this is like such a terrible thing to say about fighters, but I think he's damaged goods. I think he's damaged goods. Todd
he
said
that. He said it during the fight.
Yeah. I, I, I have to agree now, and I'm gonna say this only because I'm a fighter, and almost, and only because I'm damaged goods. Like, I understand what that means. So there's a certain point where it's not even so much the reactions, but your judgment of distance. All those things are diminished. When you're young, do you see that punch coming? Whoop, shoo, misses by. How many guys do we know who are so good at making a miss by shoo, a hair? Boom, come right back. It's just when you get older, and it's not that you got lazy. It's not that the discipline changed. It's not that, like, whatever, the training camps aren't the same. It's none of that. You just, your brain just doesn't work at that speed anymore. You're not able to see, react, change, pull the trigger. Boom. I think Anthony Joshua from a couple of years ago thought he was safe, probably was safe. This Anthony Joshua is different. And 34 is 34, even for a heavyweight. And as a guy who bases his success on athleticism, he's going to degrade faster than other guys. So that's what I see from Anthony and in terms of what moves on from here.
Anthony Joshua at the highest level, in your opinion, he's done.
Yes. I don't think we see Anthony Joshua at championship level against the guys who are vying for the world titles. Do I see him fighting like a Tyson Fury if he loses to Usyk? Yes. Do I see him fighting Deontay Wilder on basically a retirement tour? Yes. But do I see him fighting Dubois again and having a chance to win? No. Do I see him fighting Usyk again? No. Do I see him fighting even Tyson Fury if Tyson being competitive with Tyson Fury if Tyson Fury gets past Usyk? No. I don't see him competitive at the highest level anymore. That's not a knock on him at all. He has a fantastic career. I'm a huge fan of Anthony Joshua. I think I feel bad saying what I did in the post-fight interview about him, because I think people are going to be like, ah, you just hate Anthony. No, I love Anthony Joshua. He's one of my favorite fighters, favorite heavyweights for a long time. I just don't think he has it anymore. And that's no knock on him. It's just life.
He had a great run.
Amazing run.
I mean, what he did for British boxing, when
he was the king. The king
is because of him. You know, yes. He got them back on the map. 28-4. Haven't seen him bounced around the ring like that since the Ruiz fight. The two other losses were the Usyk fights, where he
but Ruiz, he dropped early. Ruiz, he looked the goods. Right. Early. He didn't look good from the opening bell in this fight.
I don't get it. I know. And I like what Ben Davison said afterwards. He goes, you guys want to heap praise on me when Joshua has a great performance. You want to heap praise on me when my fighters fight, you know, beautifully. Well, guess what? This is on us. You know, this is on us. This is on our team. I just don't know what it just didn't look like Anthony Joshua. I was just so shocked by his lack of
technical ability.
Yes. And I don't want to, like, once again, here we are talking about Joshua rather than Dubois. That's just the name of the game.
Yeah, but I said that last night too, and like, because everyone's heaping praise on Dubois, and I'm like, guys, I'm going to tell you, I mean, that version of Joshua, that's granted, he got, you know, Dubois did what he was supposed to do, but yeah. Anthony was so derelict in his ability and the way that he fights and what showed up, it almost diminishes Dubois' performance.
That fifth round, though, was epic. I mean, that's five rounds, 15 minutes. Perfect. I mean, if you're weren't like a huge fight fan and you just turned that fight on or you were there, mm-hmm. and, you know, one of your friends that watches boxing dragged you out for a night, long night, though. I mean, they had a freaking Liam Gallagher concert.
I
mean,
thank God I was coming home from the airport. I was going to miss the fight. Guys at home, I'm texting Dan. I'm like, I just landed. Like, I'm not going to sit there with my computer with no Wi-Fi walking through the airport. But I'm like, hey, dude, let me. I would have, but there was no Wi-Fi. So what am I doing? I would watch it on my phone. But also, like, I don't want to watch that kind of fight on my phone. I'm like, let me know when the ring walks. Because I'm like, I'm Ubering home. I'm like, I gotta get home to see this fight.
And I'm like, yeah, there's a freaking Liam Gallagher concert.
I've never been so happy to hear about a stupid concert in the middle of a boxing match. Hey, for people at home, for everyone listening, don't put goddamn concerts in the middle of fights. We don't like them. Nobody likes them.
That's Turkey. Once again, not learning.
Nobody likes them.
No, that was a bad. That was especially. I mean, the British fans. There's some like cachet for him, right? Him and his brother are coming back together, but U.S. fans don't give a damn about Liam.
I don't think the British fans cared that much. I think guys who really. We're here to watch fights, guys. We're not here to sit here. No.
I forgot where I was going there. But Joshua, we'll see what he has left. The rematch clause.
I want to cut you off, Dan. I want to put some praise on Anthony, on AJ, because he fought his ass off and he tried. He never stopped trying to win that fight. He went out like a goddamn champion. Yes, he got iced. Yes, he got dropped bad multiple times, but he had just hurt Dubois with a big right hand and was going for the finish, which would have been one of the most epic comebacks in history. And it's funny, as soon as that happened, I'm like, man, this guy's, he's going to do it. I was like, he's going to do it. I'm like, if he can right the ship, because he started using that jab and then he rocks him. I'm like, I mean, I know he has the skills to do it. That's why I predicted him to win. I'm like, man, if this guy does this, this is the most epic fight ever. But in my mind, I was also like, he's still done. even with that win, I'm like, he's still done. He still can't do it anymore.
Even in that final sequence, which was freaking awesome. That's how you want fights to end. Like, he went for it. Even in that final sequence, he was sloppy. He threw three straight right hands around me.
And then went to an uppercut.
Right. It reminded me of Leo Santa Cruz throwing three straight uppercuts against Gervonta Davis on Halloween in 2020. And he throws the three straight punches, the same thing. Doesn't see the counter coming. Gets flattened, iced, fight over. But he went out in a
blaze of glory.
Blaze of glory. That's the final big fight for Anthony Joshua on the championship level. He went out guns blazing, and I tweeted.
He went out the way Klitschko went out. Like that's what we want, guys.
That's
exactly
what you want. I know he had his tongue out, and a lot of that I feel like he probably was a little embarrassed about how the fight was going. But he ultimately is done. There's a rematch clause, according to Eddie Hearn.
Let's not even do that.
Right, but Daniel Dubois, fifth round knockout, is now the IBF champion. Of course, the IBF is one of the strictest organizations out there. And they strip fighters left and right. They stripped Canelo, they stripped Crawford, and they stripped Usyk. Top five stars in the sport.
Right,
they don't give a damn who you are. So now Daniel Dubois has a piece of the heavyweight title. We all know that Usyk is the heavyweight champion. But Daniel Dubois will go down the record books as the IBF heavyweight champion. Unbelievable scenes. Unbelievable fight. I mean, it lived up to the expectations. 98,000. You could have had a stinker. Could have had like a 12-round decision. No, you have an absolute shootout that ends in with a new champion and ends potentially with a new star. Now for Dubois, I mean, the sky's the limit now. I mean, he's 27 years old. He's in the prime of his life, prime of his career. We just went through what he's been through, hell and back, in terms of that's huge. That's character development. That's just like confidence. I mean, this guy has it all. He's got to feel like on top of the world right now.
Can we talk about his coach real quick, Dan?
Who's his coach? I don't even know.
So you didn't hear about this?
No.
Oh, his coach.
Didn't he fire him like the day before?
No, his coach got sick, and they were saying he wasn't going to be in the corner and he wasn't around all fight week. But apparently there was some strife. I don't know. This is all hearsay for me.
I saw something on Twitter.
But I remember getting asked about this, and I said, if he has a cold and he is sick, I understand him not being around fight week, but he can work the corner. Because at that point, it doesn't matter if he's sick. It doesn't matter if he gets Dubois sick.
Right.
What's important is he's there for the corner. Guess what? When I saw him in the corner, I was like, oh, okay. Okay, like I said, the guy can be there. You could be sick and be in the corner. I understand fight week. Guys get sick fight week. I've gotten sick fight week. It's horrible. It's terrible. It really can fuck a whole fight.
That sounds terrible.
Terrible. I had the flu when I fought Daniel Gonzalez in New York. It was horrible.
I think it was Golovkin when he fought...
Rosado.
Rosado.
Guys, it happens. It happens. De La Hoya had a couple sicknesses during his career too and just unperformed. It's terrible. The worst I've ever felt in any fight ever was that fight. January in New York City. And they bring me to...
Sick.
But they were bringing... So fight week, they're bringing me to high schools and schools and middle schools. I'm hugging kids all week. You know, I got photos of me with like 75 kids multiple times a day during the week.
Petri dishes.
But also I live in Florida and now I'm in New York and I'm like, it's, you know, 12 degrees. Anyway, but regardless, so coach shows up, result is what happened. So
did you see in the crowd, I mean, McGregor?
Yeah.
Going apeshit. He loves fighting.
He loves chaos.
He loves chaos.
He's a chaos agent at this point.
Him and AJ are boys. Like you saw that picture a few years ago when he poured the drink and the beer in AJ's mouth.
Oh yeah.
They work together. They're friends.
They're so not like, boys. That's bullshit. I'm telling you right now. This is all bullshit. This is all smoke and mirrors. This is all marketing. This is all social media.
I know, exactly. He's associated with Joshua. I don't think McGregor's associated with Dubois. I don't see McGregor hanging out with Daniel Dubois. If so, I want to see like videos of that. That'd be the
no. He's got no balls, and he's just literally speaking to the fans. He's just trying to get attention.
Point being, I love seeing him in the crowd going nuts. Like he had some money on Joshua because he was screaming. You know, he looked like a little upset.
No, he looked like he had money on Dubois.
And then once Dubois knocked him out, he was just going nuts. That was cool. You had Crawford in the crowd. You had Fury in the crowd, who looked like
looking very uncomfortable.
$100 million.
Very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable.
A guy that probably has banked over $100 million just watched another $100 million go down in the tubes, because if he beats Usyk. And this is looking really far ahead. If he beats Usyk and Joshua beats,
which he very well may,
right? They were setting up to finally fight Fury versus Joshua for it to mean something. They can still fight once again. It's not going to mean as much. But Chris, I will play matchmaker right now, and I will tell you what I think should be the next couple of heavyweight fights. One we're getting in late December with Fury and Usyk, the rematch. That is signed, sealed, delivered, whether it happens in December or it happens in January or February. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Daniel Dubois versus Joseph Parker. Joseph Parker has beat some big names. Joseph Parker, they were sticking him on comms where he doesn't do a really good job.
He's always on comms. He's always on comms, though.
Get him in the ring.
They love him on comms.
I don't like him on comms. He's too short. Anyway, I like him in the ring. Guy's getting wins. Dubois versus Parker.
Most people don't like him in the ring, by the way.
Okay, but maybe he could stifle. Maybe he could stymie Daniel Dubois.
That's a good way
stymie,
to put it.
Not stifle. He's not going to stifle him. He's going to stymie Daniel Dubois. Dubois versus Parker. Zilhai Zhang versus Martin Pakoli. A fight that we all love.
Wow. Yikes.
Right.
Yikes. Right. Yikes.
And then finally, yikes. Loser leaves town. Washed for washed. Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder. Someone's going down in that fight, and it's probably going to be Wilder, because I think Joshua has more left than Wilder. I don't see anything on Wilder's punches.
Dan, I don't know about that.
What?
I don't know if Joshua gets through that either. I don't know, dude.
You tell me you wouldn't watch Joshua versus Wilder?
No, I'm watching it with bated breath, but like on the edge of my seat with pins and needles. But. What did you say the title of that matchup would be?
Washed for washed.
Yeah.
They're not going to put that on the post.
It's dry cleaning.
What is that British song? We can go bang for bang. Someone made a meme. It said we can go washed for washed. It's so messed up, man. Mm. The sport is so frigged up.
You mentioned some really interesting fights, though. Yeah. I have a weird feeling that Tyson Fury is going to win the rematch with Usyk.
I mean, he's not the favorite, but I mean,
I have a weird feeling he's going to win that. Right now, I do. I'm not making my official prediction, but I am certainly leaning Tyson Fury, and have been for a little while. And that being said, I think that sets up a Daniel Dubois versus Tyson Fury match.
That's undisputed, and that would be awesome.
I think that he bypasses a rubber match with Usyk, and I think Usyk walks off, doesn't fight again. And then,
I mean, Usyk doesn't have to fight again.
No,
that's the beauty
he doesn't have to fight this fight.
Now he's in the A side. Now he's like enjoying everything that comes along with that.
He's gonna make a redunculous amount of money in the rematch. Win, lose, or draw, it doesn't matter. I mean, it always matters. I shouldn't say that, but like it, he's gonna make so much money that he may just walk off. But with Anthony. We got to see after you know, post fight press conference, he was like, of course I want to fight again. At this point, it's just going to be money grabs. But if you've made so much money, what
he's made a lot. I don't think it's money for him. I think it's like, he just loves being a fighter.
Attention.
Loves attention.
Is it attention?
Something that Matchroom, is coming up on a new deal with DAZN. It's kind of the same thing going on with McGregor in the UFC. McGregor, like, there's a theory out there that the reason why McGregor hasn't fought this year is because UFC and ESPN are nearing the end of their deal, and the deal is for more money if McGregor has two fights left on his deal rather than one. Same thing with Joshua.
Weird. So it's not the fact that he's 225 pounds and does cocaine every day?
That too.
On camera?
Certainly, Certainly doesn't help McGregor's cause. That's how he looks, and he's not even hiding it anymore. Yesterday, he looked like a cartoon character. He looked like someone was like, "Hey, dress up as McGregor." Exactly. Yeah. Dress up as McGregor and act like McGregor. That's who that looked like. And Ariel had to wrangle him and do an interview with him, which I thought,
God bless him.
Yeah, it was interesting. But yeah, the Zhang Bacoli one fires me up the most, and I think it's realistic of him.
Yo, can we get Zhang in a big fight? I mean, Bacoli.
It's not huge, but
like, honestly, I think
Dubois, like, that's feasible.
I honestly think that should be next. I think Zhang deserves the big fight. I'm just being dead honest. I don't think Bacoli is big enough for Zhang. What Zhang has had to go through with his career, what he's been doing lately.
But how about losing to Parker though? We're just gonna forget that happened.
But what has he done from then? And what
how does Zhang get a shot over Parker, who beat Wilder?
Because he's way more exciting as fuck.
I get it. If we're doing
okay, so they fought the same guy. They both fought Wilder, right? And yeah. Parker beats Wilder by outboxing him, gets dropped twice. Zhang absolutely demolishes Wilder, so that immediately puts him ahead. Yeah, if you want to make Zhang Parker, I get that. But like otherwise, Zhang's ahead of Parker.
No, I agree. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Like Zhang, Bacoli is like the hot fight right now. Zhang,
I think Parker Bacoli makes more sense, and then Zhang Dubois.
Yeah, but this
if boxing were, you know, righteous.
I will say this though about like the Riyadh season and like what all the heavyweight fights we're getting is like there's a rematch clause technically. But, you know, they ripped those up before, and they have given us fights that make more sense. Like, if no one really wants to see Joshua Dubois 2.
Can we talk about Turkey's predictions and how they're at 0% at this point?
Because he wanted Fury Joshua.
Yeah.
It's not predictions. It's him. It's him. Counting, it's him looking at fights before.
Cart before the horse. Every single time he does that, it fails. So betting odds, you guys are Vegas. Whenever Turkey wants to set up a fight, literally bet on the guy who's supposed to bet against the guy who's supposed to win because he's at 100% at this point. It's literally 100%.
Yeah, the heavyweight division is so much fun. I mean, this fight, finally. This fight a couple years ago doesn't get made or it's not as big. You know, we're not looking at a Zhang versus anybody because he's, you know, frozen out. Bacoli beats Jared Anderson. Now he's in the discussion. We're talking washed versus washed fights just for the hell of it, and they actually might happen.
Yeah, but they're fun. They're fun.
Exactly. I mean, heavyweight boxing is so much fun. It's a separate sport than the rest of the sport. It's just a whole different ecosystem.
If I was a heavyweight, I would still be fighting because. Yeah, you could knock me out, but like, I might knock you out. Like, and I'm gonna make.
Yesterday, it didn't matter. Like they had a combined 5 losses. Who cares? I mean, we've seen both these guys lose at the highest level numerous times. Yet no one cared. Mm-hmm. It was 100,000, and it was awesome. That's what boxing should be. Thank you. I don't know who I'm thanking, but thank you. Undercard.
Turkey. We're thanking Turkey. He's making these fights happen. I'm still gonna thank him.
Okay, thank you, Turkey. Undercard wasn't that great. One of the biggest highlights was Josh Warrington losing.
Wasn't bad. Wasn't
putting
bad.
His gloves down, Undertaker style, WrestleMania. Somebody said that he should have put his elbows and forehead on the canvas. One of the dirtiest fighters ever. Josh Warrington lost to Anthony.
Say it. Kakachi,
who. He's going to potentially move up to 135. He's the IBF.
He's a big guy. I can't believe he makes
it. He's huge. Speaking of big guys, this
big guy with no power, but apparently destroyed
Cordina.
Joe Cordina.
Speaking of big guys, 6'2", 6'3", middleweight, Hamza Shariz.
Dude, what is that? What is he?
Monster is what he
is. He's something else. I'm becoming very high on this guy.
Him versus Janibek would be. Bring the middleweight division back.
We got to see him against somebody for real. I know he fought Emma Williams.
To the Janibek fight.
I'm big on Emma Williams, but he destroyed Emma. But I need to see him against a world-class guy because Emma wasn't world-class yet. Like he had all the physical attributes to be world-class. and what would look like pedigree to be world class, but he was never there. And if you've never been there, you've never been there. It's a different thing. But I'm big on Shiraz.
Like Janibek is just whatever. I mean, he's a very technical inside out fighter, in and out, I should say. They're the two best, so get them in the ring. There was some talk about Janibek's team declining a contract to fight on this very card against Shiraz, or a future Riyadh season card. So maybe they can get that going because middleweight division is pretty bad, but they have a really good one here in Shiraz. What else happened? Bawazi beat Hutchinson. I know you have some thoughts on that.
Very impressive to me because I thought Hutchinson looked fantastic against Craig Richards. And Craig Richards is a really, really tough out. He gave Bivol all he could handle. And Hutchinson dominated, kicked his ass, really showed his class in that fight. I was very, very impressed. Very confident guy. And going into this fight, I was like, I'm a huge Bawazi fan. Don't get me wrong. I think Bawazi is super class. Very physical, good puncher. But I was thinking about this fight. I'm like, This is a fight. And it really wasn't. I know the scorecards were close, which there were some really funky scorecards on this card.
Someone had Hutchinson winning.
Which is crazy. Because the other two judges had Bawazi wide. And they're announcing the scorecards. And the first scorecard they announced for Hutchinson. And Bawazi was like, what are we doing? Scored two knockdowns. Dominated the fight. For the vast stretch of it, certainly the better fighter. Hutchinson boxed very well. He made it a tough fight for sure. But no question, Bawazi wins this fight. So when those scorecards are getting read, you see Bawazi literally thinking his world is coming down around him. But then the next two judges got it right, and they had it very, very wide, because it was. They had him by like 6, 7, 8 rounds, points, as they should have. But I think Bawazi is a real player at 75. And I mean, I'm talking about even the top guys. I'm talking about even the better BFs and the Bivols.
Benavidez? Benavidez, Bawazi today.
All of them? I got to see.
Benavidez versus Bawazi, who wins?
Those are, Dan, you just put two of my favorite fighters in the game today. Honestly, I'm a big Bawazi fan. I really like him.
I know this about you.
You didn't know that about me. I really like him. You knew about, I knew you learned this. You know I love Benavidez.
Yes.
But I really like Bawazi. It's
a great division, man. Now you add him in there. Better be of Bivol who fight. I mean, 3 weeks. Which is
that's a fight, man.
Benavidez,
Dan. You just twisted my whole brain up thinking about Benavidez and Bawazi. Now I never really thought about that until I realized they're in the same weight class.
They could fight because of the Riyadh season, and it's an interesting thought. Benavidez is ranked ahead of him in ring. If that means anything to you, but I think that's just name recognition. And Bawazi
means nothing because of Riyadh. You said Riyadh. It means nothing.
No, right. No, I meant ring ratings.
No, but I mean, but I mean, in the world of Riyadh, it means nothing because those fights could get made no matter what.
Right. David Morrell ranked 10th. Bodzik, Willie Hutchinson. It's a top heavy division. It's got two guys. It's got the number one fighter in the division is Beterbiev, and he's 40. Bivol.
So he's not long for this career.
Exactly.
This division.
So Bawazi could reign supreme because he has the skills. That was the undercard, also with a Liam Gallagher performance thrown in there. What a night. Really good for boxing. Well, I was thinking, you know, this month started with Inoue in Japan. Not the biggest fight for him, but still Inoue in Japan. Canelo last weekend, 20,000 strong at T-Mobile. A massive turnout. Great pay-per-view numbers that are trickling out now. 650K reported with a $17 million gate. Canelo's the freaking king still. Right into 100,000. At Wembley Stadium. Awesome month of boxing. And then on Friday night, we saw Jaime Munguia. Chris, you were there calling it with Christina Poncher for ESPN International. He gets a knockout win, which I think is very important for Munguia because I didn't understand what was going on with what style he was employing in this fight. He was boxing too much. This guy is a brawler. He's got Eric Morales in his corner. And he's boxing in there. And it was, I had Munguia decision for my parlay. My parlay was up in smoke anyway. I picked Munguia decision, and I picked Joshua knockout. So that parlay was, but I was watching the Munguia fight. I'm wondering, when is this guy going to start brawling? When is this guy going to start throwing combinations? Why is he letting Bazinian in this fight? He should get him out of there. Boom, 10th round, gets him out of there. Love Munguia. Still think he can be a guy at 160, but he also showed that he could be very frustrating at times as well.
So I got a lot of inside baseball, obviously. This is why I'm on the podcast. This is why you asked me to join the show back in 2022. I obviously was in the fighter meetings with all of these guys. And I'll tell you that Jaime Munguia, extremely impressive guy. I will say that. I always think my Spanish is really bad until I speak to Mexicans and I can hear them. And I understand everything they say because they just speak so well. Jaime is very, very well spoken. And Mexican Spanish is very clear and distinct and proper. So I understood everything he was saying during the fighter meeting. He is a very well-spoken, very well-thought-out individual. And he understands boxing. He has a very high boxing IQ from what he was saying. And he spoke about the differences between training with Freddie Roach and with Eric Morales when it came to strategy and technique and hard work. He also mentioned training at altitude, and that was something he was missing when he fought Canelo Alvarez, because Freddie doesn't travel. So he had to train in California for the Canelo fight because Eric Morales was not available to train him for the Canelo fight. Oh, wow. He's running for office or something in Tijuana, regardless. That's extra information, not necessary. So he did not train at altitude for Canelo. And he was speaking a lot about the strategy. And he thinks that Eric Morales is a really good strategy coach. So thinking about that fight and how it played out, and like what you said, when is this guy going to start brawling? It looked, in hindsight, that potentially we're looking at a Eric Morales strategy map for that fight. Understanding this guy's never been 12 rounds. Understanding this guy's a really good jab. Because when we asked Jaime about Eric Bazinian, bro, he nailed him. Mm-hmm. He goes, he's got an excellent jab. He has a very hard right hand. He mixes it up really well. He throws a really good uppercut too with his right hand. He's a very good boxer. He's hard to hit. He's very good early on. It's going to be a very, very, very tough fight. And I was like, when he said that, Tim and I looked at each other like, that was a very good assessment of your opponent.
Nice.
And he said it himself. This is not his coach. It's not him. He was there alone. You know, he had his, you know, translators and whatnot. But I was like, that was a very, very,
your own hands. Love that.
Very good assessment of what his opponent is. Because I was high on as a Bazinian. I told you that. This is not an easy fight. And I was telling everyone fight week, I'm like, there's a very good chance that he falls into a deep hole early on in this fight. It seemed like they knew that. And then if you watch the actual fight, round by round, and I had Bazinian ahead, but when he got stopped, very, very close, but I had Bazinian ahead. I thought the jab was really good. I thought Munguia just gets hit too much with right hands, just mm-hmm. too much. But he took off round nine. If you watch the fight, he took off round. He did nothing in round nine. CompuBox Dan, although I hate the numbers that they showed at the end of the fight, which are complete bullshit. Sorry, CompuBox. That was not.
What do you mean?
It was no, bro. They had him winning. They had him landing 149 punches to 79 for Bazinian at the end. And I was like, that's no shot. No shot. That was
what real. Was it, what were they? I didn't see the stats. What did they? What was the distribution? Like Bazinian throw mostly jabs or mostly power?
They had. Well, I was just talking about connects. It was like 149 to 79, which made no sense to me because I thought Bazinian actually landed the better punches throughout. Power shots.
That's where you got to use as well.
Right. Which, I mean, I talked to everyone ringside. Everyone agreed on that. But regardless, close fight. But in the ninth round, I was going to say, if you look at the numbers, I think he threw like 20 punches in the ninth round. He did nothing. And we're like, wow, are we taking a round off? Round 10, he comes out gangbusters. And that was part of the game plan. He said, my corner told me to take off round 9 and really push it in round 10. Because he said he could feel Bazinian was getting weaker. Which you could see. He's never been 12. So come round 10, which is the most he's ever been, never fought a guy like Munguia, he comes out guns blazing, beats him down, And as far as I'm concerned, from what I saw, Vezina quit. The heat got heavy, and he just bailed. He folded like a chair.
Threw 12 punches in round 9. Fight low.
Threw 12 punches. That's crazy.
Right. And then Bazinian outlanded Munguia in jabs, 47-43. Munguia had a pretty wide, very wide difference in power, which was pretty much what Munguia said heading in. Like, this guy has a great jab. I mean, he out-jabbed. He landed
the amount of clean, sharp right hands that Bazinian landed as well, some of which buzzed Munguia, right. And even though he said none of them hurt him, that's bullshit. I thought Bazinian hurt Munguia more than the other way around. So
Munguia gets the win, Chris, and he is now signed with Top Rank. Christian Mabili, who's the number one ranked 168 pounder in a lot of different divisions, and Ring Magazine has him number one, is also signed to Top Rank. Will they ever fight? I would love to see them fight. I think that's a freaking can't miss fight of the year type of war. But Mabili, like I just said, is ranked number one in a different all these different organizations. He has the Canelo lottery ticket. So why would Mabili potentially go and flush that down the toilet by fighting Munguia unless he knows that he's not getting Canelo, unless Canelo's going to fight Bivol, Canelo's going to fight Crawford?
Eubank,
or anyone. I would love to see Munguia Mabili. That right there is like the right, like the proper next fight at 168 for both guys. But that Canelo looming over Mabili, I mean, I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know if you heard anything this weekend with some of the Top Rank people, but Munguia Mabili should be the next fight. I mean, they're both time at Top Rank.
I didn't hear anything, but don't be surprised if Charlo comes back in the mix.
To fight who? Canelo. Yeah, Charlo is always going to be in the mix. He's a darling of the PBC. Like they're talking about bringing him back in December on that tank card.
So think about that. So then we get Charlo. And unfortunately, we're not going to know, because this is the way that Canelo works recently, is that he announces the fight 7 weeks before, which holds up everyone else in the division. So you got guys like Mabili and Munguia who are going to be waiting. I mean, not Munguia. Munguia knows he's not getting that shot. But Mabili, who's like, I could be the next guy.
Because I'm looking at it now.
No, Mbili's next. I think if it's not Charlo, it's Mbili in May.
Charlo's not even in the top 10. Yeah,
doesn't matter though. Do you think Canelo's not gonna?
No, it doesn't matter.
But that's the point. Canelo could do whatever he wants.
Right, Charlo was part of the plan from the when Canelo signed with PBC. He just has had his own problems outside of the ring. Mabili, Munguia, Plant, Berlanga, Pacheco, Iglesias. That is a nice, fun division. That's a top five or six guys. Throw Canelo in there, of course, as the man of the division.
Well, he's the king, yeah.
He's the king. And then you have all these, I mean, these other bit players. Two of them have already fought Canelo in Plant and Munguia.
Which I think are 2 and 3. I think number 2 and 3, Canelo already beat. I got right. Munguia 2 and I got 3 Plant. And I think even after watching this weekend, I looked at that and I was like, yeah, I could see Plant beating Munguia. He had a lot of trouble with the guy.
I really like the way Plant. I know Plant went down. I know he went down early in that fight versus McCombie, but I'm thinking more about how Plant finished the fight rather than the beginning of the fight. Beginning of the fight was extreme ring rust. The way he...
It was not just that, though, Dan. The physicality was a problem. He's just not strong enough.
McCombie's a 175-pounder.
Yeah, but so is Munguia. Munguia is huge, and he's very physical. And even like a guy like Berlanga. Berlanga's huge. You know, someone who could be really physical with Plant.
175.
Yeah, they're all big guys. Pacheco's he's destined for 75. And Plant would never looked small at 68, but he does now. The division got bigger.
With some of these other guys. And Canelo's not a big 168 pounder at all either. Going on at 168. Quickly, what are your thoughts on Richard Torres? Because, you know, he got the co-main event. It wasn't supposed to be the co-main event, but he got the co-main event. I think he's really intriguing, has the silver medal. Has a great profile, great kid. bring something different to the table. That's what I tweeted out after the fight. Like, he's not, I don't know how far he can go in the heavyweight division in this era of super giant heavyweights like Dubois and Joshua Fury. I don't know how far he can go, but I want to watch, and I think he brings something different to the table, the speed and the footwork. What do you make of Torres?
My thoughts on him were never good, never positive. Like, I didn't understand what everyone's attention was to him until this fight. And I saw the hand speed, and I saw his ability to make adjustments mid-fight against a very, very crafty guy in DeWaco. I know I've done DeWaco forever. He's a Northeast
crafty
guy.
Crafty in the term of him spitting on his mouthpiece until he got the small fight.
That was really that's an amateur move for someone who has so many fights and not have a mouthpiece that fits properly. Because guys at home, mouthpieces don't fall out. Never.
Right.
A properly fitted mouthpiece, you have to literally, like, get your nails under them and pull them out. It's a bitch to pull out a mouthpiece. The fact that he was just opening his mouth and it was falling out means that he had an ill-fitted mouthpiece. So the fact that this guy has an ill-fitted mouthpiece is a super amateur move. It was very embarrassing to be on that stage and have that happen to him. But also, he was getting outclassed anyway. And I thought Torres changed up his game plan, because he's usually like a shot out of a cannon, big power punching guy. He just let his hands go boom, 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 boom. I was very impressed. And he was really beating up Joey the way with those little punches. Busted his nose, knocking his mouthpiece out. I thought it was a brilliant adjustment.
With his size?
Not that far. Unfortunately, I like the kid. Not that far. He's too small. 232 is not doing it, guys.
Cruiserweight?
You're going to lose 32 pounds?
I don't know.
I think he's just a tweener. It's unfortunate.
I think it's interesting because with Jared Anderson losing, he actually admitted that he felt some pressure as being like the next American heavyweight.
He did say that,
No American heavyweights. There's no American heavyweights. It's crazy. I don't really care about that because I look at boxing. I don't look at boxing like that. I look at it as
it's a global sport.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me. As long as there's 5 to 7 intriguing heavyweights, I don't care where they come from. But just from an American standpoint, if you want to root for an American, I mean, he might be our last hope. Which is for the next couple of
it's not good. Years. That's not a good hope. He's 232. He's 6'2", 232. Daniel Dubois and Anthony Joshua were coming up on 500 pounds between the two of them. We're looking at two guys, 248, 252, 500 pounds in the ring. They're 6'6 and 6'7. 6'2", 230?
Yeah.
He's not a puncher like those guys either. He's not a big puncher.
No, he relies on the footwork. He relies on the technique. He's fun
aggression,
to watch.
Fast hands. Go very fun to watch.
I think
he's not the future. He's not the future of the heavyweight division.
Who knows? That is our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back this week. We're gonna get back on our schedule of 2 episodes a week. End of the summer was tough with traveling and all that, but from here on out, the rest of the year, with a lot of big fights on the schedule. We will be back to 2 episodes a week. Our next episode, we're going to get into a little bit of this Gervonta Davis rumors, and we'll look ahead to a weekend of fights at Madison Square Garden on Top Rank. Chris, I know there's a Pro Box show Wednesday, is there, or is there not?
No, the October 9th is the next show.
Okay, so you have a little studio time.
Reprieve, I can breathe. I can breathe.
We'll be churning out content over at the Inside Boxing Live Content Factory. I hope you have a great rest of your week. Everyone, keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Good night.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel, because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.